Welcome to Shorties, a short true crime story. Happy Tuesday, my darling.
Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday.
All right.
So after my heavy-ass story yesterday, do you have maybe something light and funny?
Or as a matter of fact, I do not. And it's also kind of related to children. And not when I say kind of, I mean incredibly related to children.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
Damn, so. I wish we had coordinated because that's a lot of heaviness back-to-back.
Yeah, we like to surprise each other. And sometimes that surprise is a
bad
joke's
one.
On us. And today I'm covering one of the largest kidnappings in U.S. history. It's the Chowchilla bus kidnappings. And I chose to do this because there have been recent developments, and I'll discuss that at the end.
Okay.
Frank Edward Ray was born in La Grande, California on February 26, 1921, making him a Pisces. His first name is Frank, but every article refers to him as Ed, so that's just what I'll end up calling him throughout the story.
Okay.
He grew up in the town of Chowchilla. Not to be confused with Chinchilla.
did that confuse you?
That confused me. And so I just wanted to make it very, very clear. Ed graduated from Chowchilla High School in 1940, got a job as a bus driver for the school district, a job that he had and loved for 40 years. Aww. Everyone knew Ed. He was the guy that would do anything for anyone. He was friendly. He was humble and reliable. He was just the type of man where you just knew your kids were completely safe in his hands. July 15th, 1976 started out like every other day. Ed was doing his usual drop-offs after summer school. And on this particular day, there had been a field trip, so the kids got to go to the Chowchilla Fairgrounds swimming pool. He had 26 students aboard, and their ages ranged from 5 to 14. The kids loved him, and even though they were loud and rambunctious, he was always so patient and kind. The kids were still riding that high from spending the day at the pool with their friends, so that day was no exception. He's driving down a country road in Madera County when a 1971 Dodge van suddenly blocks the road where the bus is headed. Ed was forced to slam on the brakes and bring the bus to a complete stop. Standing in front of him were three men armed with guns, with nylon stockings covering their faces. The windows on their van had all been painted black, and the interior was reinforced with paneling. Larry Park, who was only 6 at the time, said, "It was like looking at death." One man wearing overalls came up to the driver's side window and said, "Would you open the door, please?" Two of the men entered the bus. One held a gun to Ed while the other man took over the bus and started driving. He held a rifle in his lap. The third man followed in the van. He was holding a revolver. For the duration of the drive, everyone was silent. The only sounds came from Ed, who was telling the children to sit down and be quiet. He was speaking in a frightened and harsh tone, something that was so unusual compared to his friendly and upbeat demeanor. The three men took Ed and the 19 girls and 7 boys to a somewhat hidden spot along a shallow branch of the Chowchilla River. One of the little girls named Jennifer Brown recalled that they drove the van up to the bus door and the children had to jump one by one into the back. And they did this so that there wouldn't be any footprints. Once the first van was full, they filled another van that was hidden at the meeting spot by the river. 12 children went into one van, and 14 children and Ed went into the other van. The vans were pitch black, and the walls had been reinforced with wood paneling. One of the children recalled, "As a 6-year-old, the only way that I can describe this darkness is that it was trying to get me."
Oh.
Ed and the children were driven around for 11 hours. 11 hours without food or water or a bathroom, and 26 children that are frightened and don't understand what's going to happen to them.
And like in pitch black too.
Oh, how disorienting is that? And it's in the middle of the summer. It's so hot.
Yeah. So wait, where is Chowchilla's in California?
Yeah. So it's in, it's near La Grande.
I don't know where La Grande is.
Either. I said that in the most dismissive way. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. You did, even with your hand, like,
With the flare. It's inland California.
Is it like central?
Yeah.
Okay. So central California.
It's like 100 and something degrees.
Summer, yeah. That is brutally hot.
So it's in Merced County. So that is inland.
Oh, that's
inland.
Pretty central. Yeah. Okay. No. So anyone who doesn't know,
that
central
is hell.
California in summertime is brutally, brutally warm.
In July, brutal. Some of the older kids started singing songs to lighten the mood and distract the other children. They sang songs like If You're Happy and You Know It and Get Down Tonight. And when I read that, just like crying children singing If You're Happy and You Know It, Clap Your Hands is so horrific. Jennifer Brown, who was 9 at the time, said, a few of my little friends that are 5 and 6, they came over and started laying on me and crying. And I told them, be brave because it's going to be all right. The vans finally park around 3:30 a.m. on July 16th. Ed is the first person to get out of the van, and the men shut the door behind him. He is immediately directed to take his pants and shoes off. One of the men hands him a flashlight, and he is directed to crawl down a ladder that's in the ground.
Ew.
They repeated the same thing with the kids. They'd open the door, grab a child, then close the van door again, forcing each kid to go down the underground ladder.
Oh my God, can you imagine like not knowing where...
What's down there?
Well, that too, but being in the van and then they just open and take one and close it and then open and take one. And when you come out, when it's your turn and you come out...
Have to take your clothes off and then go into the hole in the ground?
Yeah.
And the kids said that they would scoot themselves as far back into the van as possible because they were convinced that if they hid in the darkness, the men couldn't snatch them. So each time the van door would open, they would just shuffle back as far as possible and try to hide in the corner. The kids are forced to strip off all their clothing as well. And as they go down the ladder one by one, they gave their names like some sort of roll call. The names were written down on an old jack-in-the-box bag. No one really had time to get a good look at their surroundings, but from what they could see, they were surrounded by nothing but dirt. The kids said that they couldn't tell if they were at the desert or the beach. They just knew that they were in the middle of nowhere. One of the oldest kids, Michael Marshall, was only 14 years old at the time. He said, I just remember the kids got a hold of me and were holding on to me. And just scared out of there, you know, we were all just scared out of our wits. He and a 5-year-old named Monica were the last two kids in the van. She was clinging to him in fear, and even though Michael is a child himself, he feels this overwhelming need to protect her. Michael is terrified to let her go when the men came for her. He recalled, I had to take her hands from mine and rip and tear them apart, say it would be okay, and go with them and leave her. That was hard. I get chills every time I read that.
Yeah.
When Michael climbed down the ladder last, Michael was so relieved that they weren't going to be separated and that everyone was alive. I'm going to do my best to give you a visual. The men had buried a moving truck underneath the ground and then stocked it up with some mattresses and a bare minimum amount of food. There were 4x4 pillars that were used to keep the van from collapsing under the weight of the dirt.
Okay.
So they literally dug a massive hole in the dirt and put a moving truck underneath, buried it again with dirt so you only could enter through a small hole, the ladder, down into this very tiny moving truck.
So like basically like a big giant coffin.
Exactly. It's like an underground bunker, but it's not supported well. Next thing they know, the kidnappers lift the ladder out of the van and then toss a roll of toilet paper. The only thing they said was, we will be back for you. The hole was then covered. They had been buried 12 feet underground. Meanwhile, the people of Chowchilla are losing their minds. It doesn't take long for everyone to be calling one another. I mean, their kids didn't show up at home. And with every minute that passes, they assume the absolute worst. Plus, Ed was never late. People get in their cars and immediately start searching, driving up and down every street trying to find the bus. Search parties are formed. People are going through orchards, holding flashlights, doing everything they can to find the 26 missing children and the bus driver, Ed. Around 6:30 p.m., just 2 hours after the kidnapping took place, the sheriff's department had planes flying overhead to try to find the bus that seemingly vanished into thin air. A couple hours later, a police sergeant was able to locate the abandoned school bus in a drainage ditch, but there were no children and no clues. Sheriff Ed Bates gathered all of the parents at the fire station. He informed them that he had made a call to the FBI because he was convinced that their children were victims of a massive kidnapping. Both President Gerald Ford and California Governor Jerry Brown heard about the missing children right away, and they both gave law enforcement agencies blank checks to do whatever it took to find them and bring them home. Everyone was doing everything they possibly could, and they wasted no time doing it. The FBI completely booked out every hotel in town, and the town was filled with TV crews and reporters. And that was all happening within a matter of hours. Yeah. So same day.
Yeah.
which is how it should be. Yeah, for every case. Every case deserves this amount of attention.
Yeah.
Back at the underground prison that is made from a moving van, Ed is terrified by the conditions. The side of the van and the ceiling are quickly warping under the weight of the dirt that it's enveloped in.
Oh my God.
He knows it's only a matter of time before the ceiling completely caves in.
I'm so claustrophobic. I'm like immediately sweating. My feet are sweating. My hands are sweating. My ass is sweating.
Literally.
Right now.
I kept thinking as I'm like reading this out loud, I was just in an H&M inside of a mall, like a store inside of a store. And I felt so claustrophobic. I was like, I need to get out of this place.
Yeah.
And then thinking about something that is so fear, like it's so beyond daunting and actually serious. It's not like being in a store.
Of course.
But it's like, I can't even handle that.
Yeah.
So how, I can't even imagine. One of the little boys kept kicking at blocks in the van. And these happened to be the blocks that were supporting the 4x4 pillars. It was causing the van to cave in even faster. Everyone could see dirt and dust flowing in. Once they had all been forced inside, a steel plate was placed on top of the entrance. And on top of that, two 100-pound tractor batteries. Suffocation is another element to be concerned about because there are only two air shafts and there are measly little hoses that run from the van to above ground. The kidnappers carved holes in the van to be used as toilets. They were given potato chips, bread, and peanut butter, and then some water jugs. There were mattresses scattered around the floor. So I Googled like nighttime temperatures in July in Chowchilla just to kind of get an idea of what they were going through at this time. And it was in the 90s still.
Yeah, I believe it.
They could barely breathe and they were sweating profusely. Everything would be completely silent and then one child would start crying. This would cause an eruption of tears from all of the children. Keeping everyone calm was close to impossible as every minute passed. The 14-year-old Michael said that he just kept thinking about the fact that he didn't get to say goodbye to his mom. And the thought of their last encounter brought him to tears. The kids had been in the underground prison for only 12 hours and had already finished the water and eaten all the food. This is when the vans on the ventilators stopped working. This is when they all knew that they would die. And if they were to die, they might as well do everything they could to possibly escape. The driver, Ed, and the 14-year-old Michael took the mattresses and stacked them on top of each other directly underneath the manhole cover. Ed and Michael took turns pushing the cover. And remember, this thing weighed over 200 pounds.
Yeah.
Michael said that all the children were cheering him on, yelling that he could do it. Then they suddenly said, it moved. Michael squeezed up through the hole and found that they had constructed a wooden box over it. He slammed his fists and kicked the box. No matter how exhausted he got, he wouldn't quit. Even though there was nothing he wanted more than to get out, he was terrified by the possibility that the kidnappers would be standing over the hole holding their guns, but that fear did not stop him. Suddenly, a sliver of sunlight creeps into the overwhelming dark van. One of the little boys said it was like little stars filled the place. They all knew that they were going to get out and they were going to survive. This incredibly brave 14-year-old pops his head out of the hole first. He wanted to scan the area to make sure everything was clear before the children followed him out. All he saw were trees, mountains, and tons of dirt. At 8 p.m. on July 16th, the children and Ed safely escaped their prison. They were kept inside the ticking time bomb for 16 hours.
Wow.
There were noises in the distance that kind of sounded like machinery or large equipment. And of course, there was the fear that these noises could be being caused by the kidnappers. But they knew that they had to risk it. They ran towards the direction of the noises and came upon excavators and men in hard hats. The men asked who they were, and they said that they were from Chowchilla, and they were lost.
Oh my God.
I know. Can you imagine working out there and just like tons of little children come running and screaming towards you?
Especially because it was probably all over the news, so they probably...
immediately knew who they were.
Yeah.
It turns out that they had been buried at a rock quarry in Livermore, California. And this is located approximately 100 miles from Chowchilla.
Oh my God.
So they went a distance.
Oh, so maybe those guys in hard hats
didn't know who they were. The police were immediately called. As soon as they arrived, they took photos of each child before sending them to Santa Rita. Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Santa Rita.
Santa Rita.
Yeah, just got to say it more like it's one word.
As soon as they arrived, they took photos of each child before sending them to Santa Rita Real Bishop.
Santa Rita.
My brain ain't shit these days. Santa Rita Rehabilitation Center. That's a jail. It was the only place that they could find to hold all of the children. So these poor kids pile on the bus and see that they're being driven to a jail. Oh, you're a kid. No. You don't even understand what just happened to you. The next thing you know, you're possibly getting punished for escaping. They couldn't, like, they didn't understand what was going on.
Yeah, of course.
When they arrived, they were given apples and water before being examined by doctors. For 4 hours, they were questioned, but unfortunately, they couldn't give much information about the kidnappers. They were all young, scared, and the guys had pantyhose over their faces. There just wasn't much to go off of.
And it was so dark the entire time, right?
Well, they were kidnapped technically like around 4 p.m. during the day, but then they were immediately put into vans. Like, they had no time to really get a read of what these men looked like.
Yeah, not at all.
Once the questioning was over, they finally got to reunite with their families. It had been close to 36 hours of hell at this point, and I can't even imagine how overwhelmed they must have felt. It was a media frenzy, and the kids and their families were being flooded with interview questions and attention. There were tons of interviews and excerpts, but I just want to share a specific interaction between a CBS reporter and the 9-year-old Jennifer Brown. Harold Dow from CBS News asked her, "How does it feel to be a big movie star?" She said, "I don't know. I've never been a movie star before."
Oh my God.
And the reporter goes, "For 9-year-old Jennifer Brown, the experience has allowed her to still see the world with compassion. Why do you suppose that they would do something like that?" She goes, "I don't know. They didn't have enough love."
Oh.
For a 9-year-old to even understand that.
Yeah.
Her parents are doing something right. Even though the kids and Ed were home safe and sound, they still had no idea what evil humans did this. First step was to look at who even had access to the rock quarry. In order to bury that moving container underground, completely undetected, you had to have access to this quarry.
Yeah.
They discovered that the son of the owner of the quarry had keys. His name was Frederick Newell Woods, and he was only 24 years old. After looking at surveillance footage of the quarry, they were able to place the three faces: Frederick Woods, James Schoenfield, and his younger brother Richard. They were young, privileged assholes that were from wealthy families in San Francisco. Just 2 days before the kidnapping, they had been charged with grand theft auto and simply got off with a fine and probation. After they were able to identify the three men, the evidence came easy. Not only were all the guns recovered, but there was a detailed document labeled plan at the top.
Oh, so they're stupid.
So they're real
too.
Stupid. Stupid rich assholes. These maniacs had planned this crime over a year and a half in advance. A copy of the ransom note was even found. The letter stated that they wanted $5 million in exchange for the victim's safe return. But the kidnappers never delivered the ransom note. The kidnappers tried calling the Chowchilla Police Department, but the phone lines were jammed up due to the overwhelming amount of incoming calls. So what did they do? They gave up and took a nap. By the time these idiots woke up, they saw on the news that the kids had been found.
Oh my God.
Just some of the worst criminals of all time.
Yeah.
Richard turned himself in, and Fred and James fled the state. They were eventually arrested at the Canadian border. They all claimed that even though they came from wealth, they were in serious debt and needed the money.
Okay, well, that's your problem.
This is not how you go about things. James explained, "We need multiple victims to get multiple millions, and we pick children because children are precious. The state would be willing to pay ransom for them, and they don't fight back."
Can you imagine producing someone this stupid and awful?
And evil? No. Sheriff Ed Bates believes that the brothers did it out of fear and persuasion. He believes that Fred is a sociopath and a psychopath. Regardless, they were sentenced to life in jail without the possibility of parole.
Good.
Unfortunately, that sentence was adjusted, and they were given life in jail with the possibility of parole.
Oh.
The defense argued that bodily harm wasn't caused. And even though the state acknowledged that everything about these men did was horrific, they technically couldn't convict them of bodily harm. This news was very hard on the victims, and they were outraged. Every year, one of the kidnappers would be up for parole. The victims were forced to deal with the unknown, and their traumas are triggered all over again.
And it's like to be traumatized that young, and then every year you get re-traumatized from this horrible experience in your childhood over and over and over again.
Well, as a child too, it's like you're stuck in that, you know what I mean? Like you're always a victim of those men. And actually the 7-year-old at the time of the kidnapping, his name was Larry Park. He said that the incident triggered schizophrenia and a lifelong battle with addiction. Oh. So these kids obviously had a very long road ahead of them, but some actually suffered from severe mental illness. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to June of 2012. At the age of 57, Richard Schoenfield was granted parole and walked free. Just 3 years later, his older brother James was released from prison. And just this summer, Fred Woods was granted parole at the age of 70.
Oh my God.
Fred appeared in front of a parole board a total of 17 times, each time claiming that he had been rehabilitated. Yet in 2019, he was caught running businesses out of the jail. This man will do anything for money, and he doesn't care who gets in his way.
So he got caught running businesses out of jail in 2019, but then 2022, he's cleared and he walks free?
Exactly. Exactly. All of the children had a long road ahead of them in regards to healing from the trauma, but they all seem to have something in common. They think that Ed is a hero. They said that he made them feel safe, and he gave them hope that they would see their families again. Ed went on to live a long life and passed away at the age of 91 in 2012. And that is the horrifying story of the Chowchilla bus kidnappings. Worst nightmare.
I feel like that's a nightmare you don't even think of.
No. Like, my mom didn't want me riding any public buses because of, like, the lack of seatbelts.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
she
you
didn't
know,
even
like,
think about this.
Like, car safety. You don't think about kids being held hostage.
Or buried in a big truck. And these guys are so stupid and also so creative in the way that they did that.
Well, I feel like stupid people often have really dumb, outlandish answers to things. Like, to me, burying a bus underground is like the hardest way of holding people.
Right.
Yet also so creative.
Especially because their intention was to not kill them. If their intention was to kill them, then I totally think that that's just a really sick and twisted way to do it. Yeah. But their intention was to not kill them because they wanted
$5 million.
Yeah, they wanted money.
You would make sure that the place was safe and sound to ensure that they're alive, because you don't get that ransom if you don't.
We're also like nitpicking
sociopaths. Yes. Yeah, I know.
We're wasting our time. I don't know why we're doing that.
It's very tempting to do so, though. It's all we read about these days. So,
well, thank you for sharing that story.
Well, thanks for listening.
Love you.
Love you.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you enjoy listening. We owe everything to the many journalists, authors, filmmakers, psychiatrists, and psychologists whose extensive work and expertise we pulled from to share this episode with you. To view detailed source material, as well as content from today, please visit us on Instagram and TikTok at Shorty's Podcast. We really love doing this show, and if you'd like to help with the continued creation of it, you can support by donating to our Patreon, patreon.com/Shorty's Podcast. This episode was hosted by Ashley Brumley Johnson and Anika Tharina.